You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 566, the Reddit game show. Well, it's not a show. The Reddit game episode, yo. And we're back, and this is the Punk News Podcast. Kind of a slow news week this week. And honestly, like, ever since COVID, most weeks have been sort of slow, and things are picking back. I remember during COVID, every week was pretty much actually, historically, November and December are slow weeks in the punk world, because not a whole lot of people are doing stuff, you know, not a whole lot of records tend to come out then, although post-COVID, it's mania all the time with regards to new releases. But during COVID, like, almost every week was a slow week because no one's on tour. So since no one's going on tour, no one's really getting into hijinks, good and bad, and so forth. Now, because we're in post-COVID or semi-post-COVID, is a lot of people are on tour and a lot of people are putting out stuff. And so every week our news is like, there's a new record out, blah, blah, blah. So I expect the hijinks will resume in a couple of months. But until then, we've got somewhat of a slow news week this week, so we're going to be playing a game. Before we play the game, let's say hi to our co-host. We've got Hallie Bullitt. Hallie Bullitt, what's happening in the world of NJ?
I almost thought you were going to say contestant. Just the way you introduced the game and me, then I felt like I was like a contestant on a game. But I'm doing good. I now I don't remember what the question was that you asked me.
I don't remember that I asked a question.
I feel like there was an up inflection, but you probably just asked me how I was doing. I'm doing pretty good. I'm here, and that's all I've got to say.
You know, I think it's time to bring back a game show on the Punk. I mean, we're playing a game tonight, but not a game show. I think maybe it's time to bring back a game show. We used to do Punk's Points on the show. We did the dating game once, and it worked out horribly. And you were talking about, at one of the Punk News Summer Soirees, I tried to do a dating game, and it did not work out at all because, understandably, like, women. I actually think maybe it's kind of a different era now, but back then, 5 years ago, yeah, it was 5 years ago, it was the Punk News Summer Soiree 1, I wanted to do a dating game, like the dating game back from like the 80s or early 90s, and apparently I was the only person that got, like, it's not real, it's not actually a dating game, it's silly, and it's all a charade, you know, but like everyone else in the world took it like seriously, so I had like no women respond because I think they felt like it'd be weird and uncomfortable and odd, which I understand that. But then I got like emails from so many dudes and they were like super explicit. They were like, oh, I like this being stuck here. You know, I like doing this. I like this, getting blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, this is supposed to be like a PG dating game. Like, why are you sending me your explicit sexual fantasies? It was weird. I literally got like 12 emails of explicit sexual preferences. Or semi-explicit sexual preferences. Like, I'm a blah, 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 and I like doing blah, 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 and I like getting this taped on here and blah, blah. I'm like, what? So, I don't know. I've always wanted to do a dating show live just because I think it would be hilarious. But I think it's just too difficult to pull off. And more, too difficult to pull off? Or is it a different era now? And now that people are so open, I'll be able to do it. But I want to keep it PG or PG-13. Like to me, X-rated and like R-rated is just – everyone's R-rated now, so it's not funny anymore. So I think it's better to be PG, and people it's like almost odd that you're PG. Like, people are like, well, is there something sinister behind it? Because everyone is a little too happy and a little too clean. You know, like the minister down, you know, the preacher down the street that's always smiles a little bit too much and wears a little bit too expensive of a jacket. You know, like that's the angle that I like. You know, not R-rated. You know, I just feel like R-rated played out. So, Enmore, can we ever do a dating game show or? Will my dream never happen? I should stick to Punk's Points live.
I think if everyone's like in on it and it's, you know, it's just, it's nice and it's fun and it's funny and it's not like, you know, attracting all of the creeps, I say go for it.
What I wanted to do is the long-time listeners will remember Joe Pallone, a good pal of mine who used to contribute to Punk. He was the Punk News editor for a while. I had Punk News Summer Soiree 1. I wanted to have the dating game with, like, three guys and one girl because it's easier to get guys to play than girls, at least back then. And then, like, they would, you know, ask the questions and they wouldn't see each other. And then the girl would pick one guy. And then I wanted them to go to the pizza parlor down the street and have their date during one of the sets. And for safety and for comedy, I wanted Joe Pallone to wear a big sash that said chaperone and sit right between them during the date. But I never got to do it.
And if, we and did that.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, no.
Go.
We did a dating episode. I feel like we did a couple dating episodes when I was on the Chris Gethard show. And they went, like, really well. And they're, like, people that are married now because they met on those episodes. Like, friends of ours. And, like, friends of ours married maybe, like, people we didn't previously know who just showed up for that episode. Or people we didn't know who then, like, met on the show and were dating. And then were, like, coming to all the show. It's pretty wild. At some point, there's going to be, like, I mean, Chris and I met because of the show. I mean, so there's already like babies. There's always like already like children that exist that wouldn't have existed if the show hadn't been, but it's just going to like continue on because a lot of these couples, like one of them just got married last year, a couple that met on the show. It's like pretty wild. So those things do work sometimes because, you know, you figure a thing like that, like if you had a dating show, John, and people weren't like fucking being weirdos about it and like showed up in earnest, You already have something in common, right? Anyone that listens to this podcast, like they sort of listen to somewhat the same music and are interested in somewhat the same scene. And I think it was true of Gethard Show too, right? Like those people just like, they all liked weird comedy. They all probably liked the same, you know, there was like definitely a kind of band that was always on the show. And so they probably had like somewhat similar musical taste. So it ended up being like a pretty all right way for people to meet someone that they were going to click with, you know?
So you think we should keep forging along and trying to do the Punk News dating game live? I came up with Punk Connection. That was the name, not Love Connection, Punk Connection. So the show wasn't the dating game. It was Love Connection. And our version was going to be Punk Connection. So you think we should keep trying to do that?
I'm saying, I think there's a world in which it could go well, but it's kind of got to, you got to, well, because it's like, because which Punk News people are going to show up? Like, is it going to be like, what are the like commenters on the website who's just like a complete Yahoo? Or is it going to be like someone cool? I guess you don't know.
I will say the jackasses on the comment section, I would bet $10,000 they wouldn't show because I've met two, and I'm not going to go into it again. I've met two of them in real life. And behind the keyboard, they're cowboys. Bat, bing, bang, bing. In person, they are flex. You know, nothing, nothing.
Yeah.
You know, they're not. They're not. You know, it's not. You know, it's not Brad Pitt or it's not. You know, Quentin Tarantino stepping into the room. You know what I mean? It's a dude with confidence problems. That's who it is. You know. Yeah. So, anyways.
Yeah.
Let's play the Reddit game. So, anyways, on Reddit, there's a subreddit called Am I the Asshole? And on Am I the Asshole, people sign on and they have a dilemma in their life. And then the community, the Reddit community, I don't even know if it's a community, but the Reddit community, the Reddit readers say whether or not they think that person is being an asshole. And so the idea is to help you solve your problem, but also was I the bad person? So I'll give the listeners an example. Like, let's say there's a guy and his neighbor's got a dog and the dog comes over on his lawn and craps on his lawn and runs back. But the problem is the guy that has the dog is blind and the dog is a service dog. The guy might ask, am I the asshole if I, you know, tell my neighbor to knock it off? You know, and people would say yes or they would say no. You know, what I find – and I used to read that subreddit more often. I don't read as much now because I think a lot of it is fake and a lot of it is repetitive. And a lot of weird wedding stuff, you know, like I'll give an example in a second.
Wait, what?
I'll give you an example. So anyways, but the point is when I used to read it more, I read it once in a while still, but not as much. But when I would find myself so wildly at odds with the rest of the reader community, I would say, well, I think blah. And I would get nukes down like Reddit's got this thing called Reddit points, which is the dumbest thing in the world. And I fall for it. It's like, the more people that like your comment, the more Reddit points you get. And I'm like, ooh, I've got 900 Reddit points. Ooh, I've got 700 Reddit points, you know. But you can't do anything with them. It is a complete, like scam. And even I'm like, ooh, 900 Reddit points. Like, it's finished, you know. So the last time I really did anything on Reddit is, like, and we'll get to in a second, like person said blah blah blah, and I'm like, well, I think blah blah blah, and I thought I was so clearly correct, and I'm like, I read this situation, I got nuked so bad on Reddit, you know, I think the county sent me a letter and said stay off Reddit, you know, like I got nailed, right? So anyways, I'm going to do three Reddit stories, one am I the asshole where I agreed, one where I disagreed, and one where it's a who knows, and I'm going to have Hallie and M say if they think the person is an asshole, and then if I agreed with the general community consensus. Here's the wedding. This is not part of our game, but here's the wedding one. This one's weird. This is not part of our example. I'm just going to say, just weird people out there. So this lady's getting married, right? And she doesn't want to wear a white dress, so she gets, I think, like a peach color dress or something. Well, it turns out that her mother-in-law, whose 62nd birthday is next week, got the exact same dress and wants to wear that dress at her 62nd birthday. But she really wants to wear the dress at her wedding because she loves the dress and it's the dress for her. And then the whole family has gotten into huge arguments and have taken sides. Some people say it's her wedding, she should wear the dress. Some people say, no, it's her 62nd birthday and she really loved the dress and she got it first. And like they're texting each other and fighting, like the family is destroyed over this dress. And I'm like I don't think, like, I can't imagine my family on either side getting in a huge fight over whether or not mother-in-law should be wearing a dress or not to her 62nd. Like, who gives a shit? Like anyway, that's like the weird wedding dilemmas on Reddit.
I mean, I don't. People, when it comes to weddings, people fight about anything. But also, wait, the mother-in-law is insisting on wearing the dress that the bride wanted to wear?
Not at the wedding, at her own 62nd birthday party a week later.
Yeah, it's a little weird. Just let the bride do what she wants to do. Don't like steal her thunder. Don't like wear her dress.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying, but the entire family is like totally divided over this, and there's like massive war between the family. And it's not like husband side versus wife side. It's like all mixed up, and there's all these factions, and they're all on Facebook talking with each other. And I'm like, this is not like either like it's all lies, or there are really whacked out, really toxic, just bizarre people out there. I don't. And people
well, we know that that's true. There's like no question that that's true.
People with too much time on their hands.
There's weird and toxic people with too much time on their hands.
So listen, let's play the Am I the Asshole game. So I'm not gonna read the whole thing because it would be way too long. So I'm gonna paraphrase. So here's the first one, okay? So there's a lady and she's married to a guy, and the guy's mother and father were of Polish descent, and being Polish is very important to them. And the father passed away last year. Before he passed away, every year on, say, like, I don't know, March 15, they would go over mom and dad's house, and everybody would wear traditional Polish clothing. And if you've seen traditional Polish clothing, it's really not that freaky. It's like it's basically European folk clothing. Like, for women, it's like a white blouse with like some embroidery on it, the bonnet, and like a long skirt. For guys, it's like, like those weird European like shorts that go like below the knees, if you know what I'm talking about, like stockings, and the little hat that's kind of dorky but it's kind of cool. It looks kind of like a Robin Hood hat, and yeah, like, you know, like a puffy white shirt, and maybe with like not a lederhosen but sort of like a lederhosen type thing going across the chest, you know. So they do that every year because grandpa or whoever loves being Polish, and they make Polish food and they have a big party and everything's Polish, right? And so that's the husband's side of the family. Well, sadly, dad passed away, but mom still wants to have the Polish party. And everybody dresses up in the Polish clothes when they go. Well, wife doesn't want to dress up in the Polish clothes because it makes her feel self-conscious. So husband says, all right, well, you can come. Just don't wear the Polish clothes. Not a big deal. Wife says, but then she'll feel like not part of it and excluded because she'll be the only one wearing not Polish clothes. So she wants them both not to go to the Polish party. I've got a different opinion. What do you guys think the Reddit community response was? And if you want me to re-explain the scenario, I will.
No, I've got the scenario. It's just, it's hard to have like a strong opinion about. Did Reddit feel very strongly about it?
Oh, yes, and I felt very strongly about this one too. I'm surprised you're on the fence on this one.
I mean, I don't know. M, help. Do you have a strong opinion about this?
I think Hallie hates this game.
No, I just, like, I don't know. Like, what? I don't know. Like, I wish people just wouldn't get upset with each other about stupid shit. This is what I feel.
To me, this is very obvious.
Yeah, everyone should just do what they want. Right?
But see, wife doesn't want husband to go because she doesn't want to be the only one not there, but she doesn't want to go and be the only one in not Polish clothing, and she doesn't want to wear Polish clothes.
Well, she's just being unreasonable then. I mean, she, like, I don't know. Yeah. It's...
I'm just taking it all in.
All right, listen, wife should. Oh, go ahead, Emmy. I think you're going to answer. Go ahead.
Yeah. So she doesn't want to go because she doesn't want because the clothes make her feel self-conscious.
Right.
So could she go and like leave off the part that makes her self-conscious? Like if it's a shirt that does, can she like swap it out for another shirt so she's still like Polish-y?
We'll say for
Polish-ish.
Polish-ish.
We'll say for the purpose of this conversation, that'll make her feel self-conscious because she's the only one that won't be dressed Polish style.
And it's just one day out of the year.
It's one day, and it's also Grandpa or whoever died last year, so it's the first year without Grandpa.
I think she should do it. Like, I know it would make her feel uncomfortable, and that's not fair. No one should be put in that, like, that position, but, like, it's a family thing, and it's to honor somebody. So I'd say it's one day a year. It's probably just for a few hours. Like, it's probably not the full day. Put on the Polish garb. Eat lots of sausage. Pierogies.
Borscht.
And go for it.
I sort of disagree with M. M says no one should have to feel uncomfortable. I disagree. Putting on Polish clothing, which looks kind of cool, is not that big of a deal. No one's asking you to get a tattoo. Everyone else is doing it. So put on the Polish clothes. Go and be a trooper for your husband or your wife or whoever. Let's not be babies here. Stop being weird. Just go and do it. But if you don't want to go and do it, then stay home. But your husband should go anyways. You know what I mean? I just think that's weird. And they're being a big baby. And who gives a shit? I think sometimes you should feel uncomfortable. Like, not like morally uncomfortable, but putting on clothes you don't like, just go and do it. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes you have to be uncomfortable to grow. I mean, that's the truth. You know, if you're never uncomfortable, you're never going to grow. So she should do it.
Well, it's a little, listen, I don't know exactly what's going on in her mind, but I do think sometimes this stuff is deeper for women because women feel so judged by their appearance. And if she feels like that these clothes aren't flattering on her or something and that she's going to be judged, if she's feeling miserable about her body, which happens to women a lot. I mean, again, I don't know the backstory, but I do think like that can be a little bit more complicated sometimes for the ladies than it is for guys. You know, it's because it can be more than just like, oh, I think I'm going to go and I'm going to look silly. It's like women feel that they're going to be judged and they're going to feel ashamed and it's going to be a horrible experience if they don't look good, you know, which is like pretty fucked up. That women feel that way, but we all do at times, you know.
Well, that's why Reddit is so divisive. There you go. We're going to split the decision. Anyways, the Reddit community, everyone said that she should either not go or put on the Polish clothing, but she's being unreasonable. That was the Reddit the public decision. And maybe you agree with that, or maybe you don't. Let's do another one. I think this one on the Punkish Podcast is going to be very divisive. I've got extremely strong opinions about this one.
Okay.
Lady and husband go out to dinner at a not fancy place. It's like a Denny's. I don't think it was a Denny's, but it's basically a Denny's. Their server is someone that's mentally handicapped but still able to act as a server. The server says to the husband, "You are very, very handsome. I want to go out on a date with you." And he just laughs and says, "Oh, I'm taken." And that happens like 3 or 4 times throughout the night. The server keeps saying, "You are handsome. I want to go out on a date with you." And he says, "Oh, no, no, no." Or the wife says, no, he's mine, ha-ha, you know, whatever. They don't like that the server's doing that, so they leave, like, a 47-cent tip or a 32-cent tip or something like that and leave.
Oh.
And they wanted to know, were they the assholes for doing that? I had an extremely strong opinion here, and so did Reddit. And did we agree or disagree? I don't know. And more, what do you think?
Oh, and the couple are the assholes. That's awful. Like, especially if you're a server and you're in the restaurant industry, they don't pay you typically a living wage and you rely on your tips. So to like leave something that's just like loose change is awful. Like it sounds like the server like did their job, took their order, there wasn't a problem with the food, there wasn't a problem with anything, and it seems like
Well, there was a problem from their perspective. There was a problem with the service because the server kept saying to the man, "You are handsome. I want to take you out on a date."
Yeah, but I don't think it was done with like malintent. Like I don't think it was like said on purpose to make them feel uncomfortable or feel any way like that. So that's my
You're ruling.
opinion. Yes, the couple are the assholes and they should have left a tip.
Hallie Bullet, what's your stance?
So, yeah, I feel like they handled it wrong because, okay, so let's say I have a plumber and I've asked the plumber to come and fix my sink because it's leaking. And the plum, well, no. It'd have to be like a more long-term thing. Okay, hold on. I'm working on my analogy. A contractor. I have a contractor who's doing a job for me, like a long job on my house, doing like a renovation. And every day they come up and they say something offensive to me, and I don't like how they treat me, and I don't feel comfortable with them in my home. But I continue to let them to show up and work on my house, and then at the very end of the job, I say, oh, never mind, I'm not paying you because you offended me every time you were here. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, what this couple should have done is said, either told the server to knock it off, or they should have gone to management and said, we're not comfortable with this server. We need someone else to handle our table, which would have been perfectly acceptable. But what's not cool is to have someone continue to work for you, and then you just decide you're not paying them for their work at the end. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so I just don't feel like it was handled way right. But I think they're apps, but I think that was super unprofessional, and that's not how you're supposed to treat people when they're trying to relax and they're out for dinner, and that's not part of your job to make people like to hit on people and make them uncomfortable. It's essentially harassment, right? So no, I don't, I mean, I think the server did a terrible job, but at that point you have to kind of fire the server from your table and get another server, someone that you're willing to pay for their work. I don't think the answer is just, I'm not going to pay you for your work. Does that make sense?
It does.
Yeah.
You, Hallie, you have a very similar take to the Reddit community. They felt as though instead of leaving a 37-cent tip, they should have left a normal tip or no tip and then went to the manager and explained their problem. I had a strongly different opinion, and it's basically what got me banned from Reddit forever. My opinion was, and I said this, and I couldn't believe everyone disagreed with me. I got like negative 17,000 points. Like literally, like I got destroyed.
Sean, oh no.
I said that, listen, it's a diner, it's not a fancy restaurant. The waiter or waitress, Rob, waitress, the waitress is someone that's mentally handicapped. You have no idea how tough it is to be mentally handicapped. You know, I used to do guardianships for mentally handicapped people. I don't know how tough it is. I mean, I used to be a guardian supervisor. It is an extremely tough life. I know that. It's ex tough for the family. It's tough for the person. You know, it's extreme. I mean, I used to have clients where the incapacitated person, that's what we say in law, was like 28 and a huge guy, but he's got the mentality of a 4-year-old. So he's running around the house, jumping up and down, jumping on the couch, but he's not, you know, 30 pounds. He's 270 pounds. You know what I mean? It's a very, very, very tough life. So in that case, if they're bringing you the food, if they're mentally handicapped, you just got to take one for the team and say, your husband's not going to run off with that with this lady. You know what I mean? So she's not a threat, you know. So you just take one for the team and say, and you just leave a good tip and you leave because better that they're working at the restaurant than sitting at in some convalescent home where the vast majority, not all, but the vast majority are living hells and the people just rot away and disintegrate. So I say you just got to take one for the team because it's not a threat. You're not going to get hurt. You know, it's, I mean, is it sexual harassment? I don't think so. You know, even if it is, then in this rare scenario, just take one for the team. I got nuked so bad. They were like, no one should have to, you know, suffer with sexual harassment. I'm like, I don't think it's sexual harassment if there's no threat involved whatsoever, you know. And so I felt very strongly about that, and I got destroyed. Destroyed. My one fear was is that if this person keeps doing it and they don't tell the manager, and I would not recommend reprimanding this person whatsoever, but you don't want the wrong person to come. Like, if you ignore, if everyone would ignore it, then it'd be fine. But you might get somebody with, you know, some kind of angle or something and really want to make this person's life miserable. So you have to kind of correct the behavior without reprimanding the person. That would be my advice in a perfect world. So that's how I felt.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Very divisive again. Here's one. Oh, let's do – you guys want to do one more?
Yeah.
All right, this one's just wacky. I don't really have no one had an opinion on this one. So, well, actually, people had opinions, but it was very, very split. So, 14-year-old goes over 20-year-old sister's college apartment. She's got a nude painting of herself in her house that her husband that her boyfriend did because he's an art major. 14-year-old boy brother freaks out and tells parents. Parents freaks out. Who's the asshole?
the brother.
Okay, so you think it's acceptable to have a nude painting of oneself in one's house in prominent display?
Why not? Live your life. If it makes you happy, go for it. Well, it was probably a gift.
Well, I'm so confused. If it was prominently displayed, then why did the brother need to tell? Like, didn't the parents just see it? I'm so lost.
No, the parents weren't there.
Yeah, okay.
And the brother freaked out at seeing a naked picture, naked painting of his sister.
How old's the sister?
20.
I don't know. I don't know. Sorry. I don't care.
Well, that's. I feel like that this
what
game
do you
was
think?
A fail.
What do you think?
I think no one's an asshole here, but I think honestly, if I had naked paintings of myself, I wouldn't leave them out if my family was coming over. I'll say that. That's weird, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's weird that you'd want people to see naked paintings of yourself, but I mean, maybe in the Instagram era, when everyone's, you know, in boxer shorts or bikinis on Instagram, maybe that's not society anymore. I don't know.
It's like going back to like the Renaissance.
Yeah, or the Roman era when everyone was naked all the time. You know, every statue's naked. It's like, why is this guy fighting Goliath naked? You think he's going to wear some kind of armor? Nah, he's got to be naked. in the biggest battle of his life, definitely be naked. You know. All right. Let's see who the best wrestler is. Everybody get naked. Can I wear a jock strap? No, you have to be naked when you wrestle. All right, I'm gonna do javelin. I'm gonna do a high jump. Can I wear pants just to keep everything, you know, kind of battened down? Nope, you gotta be naked. I'm sure the listeners know that in the ancient Greek Olympian Games, you had to be completely naked while doing them.
Awkward.
Imagine the long distance run. I mean, imagine that. It's bizarre. I mean, really, who comes up with these rules? All right.
They get sunburned everywhere too.
I no SPF 100, man. I would not make it. I would not be an ancient Greek Olympian as opposed to now. Listen, I feel like my Reddit game was a bummer. I feel like it bummed everybody out, but I enjoyed it. So there we go.
No, it didn't bum me out. Listen, well, I'll tell you what happened in my mind. I thought we were playing this game, but I thought you were going to be telling us things that you had done or said.
Oh.
And that we were going to be weighing in. I didn't understand that we were just going to be talking about complete strangers. I mean, this is why I don't spend time on Reddit, because I don't care. I just don't care about I don't care about perfect strangers and what they're doing with their lives. I'm so sorry.
Listen, I think you've got the healthy attitude, frankly. And maybe sometime we'll do John. See, we could do John. Am I the asshole?
I thought we were doing John. Am I the asshole? That I was interested in.
But you don't think that's too narcissistic? Like, you don't think that's me making my world the universe? You don't think that's too much?
I mean, this is your, I mean, that's why people podcast, to like broadcast their universe, right?
All right. Well, then maybe sometime we'll play, I mean, I actually have tons of those stories. Tons. So maybe we'll play that sometime. So anyway, let's play a song. We're going to be playing this track later on, but this is a track by Boss. Boss includes Jonah Falco of Effed Up, Maxime of Rixe, Charlie Manning Walker of Chubby and the Gang, and Nick Sarnella and Amory Benitez of The Chisel. So a super duper super group. So this is Boss doing Cash Him In.
Just find the right soul and first you form a circle. A step to the right, a gravitational miracle. First you get a smile and then you get a chance. It's done as it starts, a trip over the top. First you get a smile and then you get a chance. Dust yourself off and get a pat on the back.
Let's do a little bit of news. Let's see. How long have we been rocking already? Let's see. I'll read this next story while I figure out what time it is. So listen, Ricky Rochelle has released a video. The video is for the song Yeti in the Snow. And the cool thing about the video is it's stop motion animation, much like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer by Rankin Bass Productions from the 60s and 70s. And this video was actually made by Thomas R. Smith of Robot Chicken and The Simpsons. And if you've seen Robot Chicken, then you know it's stop action, like claymation and action figures and stuff, like doing obscene stuff. And so in the video, it's got the Yeti running around killing things, specifically Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, and Leia Organa of Star Wars. And that's the video. Emmore, did you enjoy this video?
Oh, I love the video. The video is great. There's blood, and at one point the Yeti rips off a head, and there's like a dangly vertebra kind of thing. And it's just perfect. It's the Yeti's misunderstood. He's finally getting revenge. Finally being seen for who he is. And I would, like, if this was a full, special, I would watch this. This would be my Christmas go-to, or at least winter go-to.
That says so much about you, Emmore. It's why we love you. Yeah, this is cool, right? It's like, it's funny to take that old style that we're so familiar with these, like, really feel-good, kind of corny, like kids things from, yeah, right. Those were all 80s, right? 70s? 70s, John? 80s?
I think Rudolph is like 60. Like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, they're even older than that. It's funny. And it's like really well parodied, right? Like it really is like quite accurately in the style of those old movies, which I thought was just awesome. I mean, I thought the video was more interesting than the song, unfortunately, but the video, yeah, I thought it was just like, yeah, a pretty spot on parody. I liked it. John, I remember from your write-up that you were like super, super into this.
I was. This is another case where, like, hey, like, you want to pro our video? And I'm like, yeah, whatever. Send me this stuff. And then, like, I'm totally unenthused. And you can tell it's like a huge deal to them. And then I actually watch it. I'm like, holy crap, this is awesome. I love Claymation. I love Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Although, honestly, watching Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer makes me sad these days because, A, like, his parents and Santa are totally dicks to him. But he gets over that, which is cool. But the Yeti and Rudolph or the Abominable Snowman, I think he's called a Mumble or Bump. He's called a Bumble.
Yeah.
Like, he gets such a raw – like, he's minding his own business. Yukon Cornelius and Rudolph beat the crap out of him. They rip out his teeth. They throw him over a cliff. And then Yukon Cornelius enslaves him and makes him work at Santa's workshop. I feel so bad for the Bumble and Rudolph. It almost makes me –
That's not, America. But, you just described, like, a history of America. No wonder it's so popular.
Similarly, I used to watch. I used to love the Sinbad movies, which were done by what's his name? The most famous claymation guy ever. I can't remember his name. But in Sinbad the Sailor, there's a part where Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. I have to look this up real quick. The guy's name. Here we go. Seventh Voyage of Sinbad by the claymation guy is Ray Harryhausen. So in, like, when I was, like, you know, little, and I still love the movie. You know, it's basically the same as Conan the Barbarian. They sail to an island. They fight a cyclops. They get a magic lamp and then return back to Arabia. But like watching it now, it kind of bums me out because, like, the Cyclops is minding his own business on the island, and the reason he got the magic lamp is because he was swimming in the ocean and he found it at the bottom of the ocean, and so he brought it back up and he put it in his treasure pile, and he's minding his own business. Sinbad comes along and blinds him and kills him and steals his lamp, and it's like, it'd be one thing if, like, the Cyclops was, like, raiding humans and eating them, but he's literally on his own island minding his own business, and Sinbad comes along and brutally blinds him and then kills him because he wants his money. So, like, watching these movies these days, it does kind of bum me out, you know?
You have a heart, man. You have too big a soft spot for monsters.
I do love monsters.
You really just relate to these monsters so deeply.
I do. We're both outcasts. Everyone hates us.
Don't we all relate to the monsters?
Well, that's what makes them so appealing, isn't it? You know? Yeah. But I will say it probably is an accurate depiction of the ancient world and even the modern. Like, you read ancient history. Like, I'm going off topic here. And one of my favorite things is it's a letter to Marcus Aurelius where they in one of the provinces beyond – I think it's in Britain at the time. It's, you know, Britain, B-R-T-O-N. The Roman soldiers are beating and raping slaves. And, like word gets back to Marcus Aurelius, and he chews out the Roman soldiers. He's like, how dare you, you know, beat the slaves? You know, we're Romans. We're bigger than this. And meanwhile, like, 3 years earlier in the Gallic Wars, they were beating and raping slaves all the time. And, like, Marcus Aurelius' response is like, well, yeah, that was war. Of course we were. You know, it's like the morality is so different than, like in the Roman morality, if you're in war, you can beat and rape slaves all you want. That's fine. But once war's over, that's a very bad thing to do. You know what I mean? It's like the morality is so different in the ancient world. It really is, you know. But we could write a textbook about that, and many people have. So anyway – the video is awesome. I love the video. I love Claymation. I think this is one of the best videos of the year. And maybe the best, not the best, because I do love that Crazy in the Brains video. I think that Crazy in the Brains video is awesome. Meanwhile, speaking of another new song, Converge and Chelsea Wolfe have, as well as Ben Chisholm and Stephen Brodsky, have released a new video. The video is called, the song is called Coil, and it's off the upcoming collaborative album Blood Moon. That's going to be out November 19 via Epitaph. Surprising. I guess Converge is always on. Is Converge on Epitaph or Death Wish? I know Death Wish is Converge's label, but maybe they're not on Death Wish. Maybe they just own Death Wish.
I don't know.
The vinyl's coming out on Death Wish.
It looks like, for the most part, they're on Epitaph, but the Death Wish does do some projects and some licensed thing. So anyways, a couple of things here. One thing is, do supergroups ever live up to their name? Second, did you dig this song? And more.
I think certain supergroups definitely do. Like last year, yeah, it was last year. It was Val and Emma Ruth Rundle teamed up, and they did Mayor Chambers Be Full, and that was one of my albums of the year. It was amazing. It was outstanding. It was so good. It's kind of the same thing. It's like Thou are a heavy band, and they're kind of sludgy, and they do all sorts of different stuff. And Emma Ruth Rundle is like a folk singer, but she has like a heavy vibe at points too. So like they call it, like, it was so good. They blended together and everything worked out really well. So in that way, with this type of music, I think it can work really, really, really well. With this, I loved the song. The song's like 6 minutes. I've listened to it 5 times. Is that right? I've listened to it 5 times today. it's so good. And where there's so much going on, and I found like the instruments and the lyrics and the vocals and the way everything works, like they're both so visual, and you just like put it on and you can sort of, well, you don't space out, you're a part of the song, like you're a part of the world, you know. And it's just, it's relaxing and it's nice, and like the way their voices sound together, and then Jacob Bannon's softer voice. It's just, I can't wait for this album to come out. I'm really looking forward to it. So like this group, they performed under the name Blood Moon in 2016 at the Roadburn Festival. So like that's why their album's called Blood Moon. And I thought that when they put something out, they would be known as Blood Moon instead of Converge and Chelsea Wolf and everyone kind of separately. But no, I was a big fan of this. And it had like that quiet power sort of thing. Like, you know, you listen to something and like you feel it, and like it kind of reinvigorates you almost. And that's what I find with a lot of like stuff like this. It's just like it goes right through, and you're kind of ready for the day. Hallie, what did you think?
I mean, you know, right? Like, you know, like it's just not for me, but it doesn't mean it's not good. And I almost feel like with stuff like this, it's like I just don't have the ears for it, or it's like in a language that I don't understand. Do you know what I mean? It's like I rely on you, Em, to tell me if stuff like this is actually good or not. You know what I mean? And then I trust you. Like, if you like it, then I'm like, oh, it must be good for people who like this kind of stuff. You know what I mean? You could have easily, yeah. You could have just as easily been like, oh, this is garbage. And I would have been like, oh, okay. I mean, it's almost like I don't have my ears just can't like lock in with it. You know what I mean? Because it's not my thing. Were you into this, John?
I thought it was okay. I find that supergroups often don't live up to the potential at all, if in part because very, very frequently, like, the bands don't want to give their best stuff to the supergroup because they want it for their own band, or because they just got together and they jammed for like a weekend or whatever. Like, oh yeah, let's do this. But sometimes supergroups really are amazing. I think of Shrine Builder, which was Al of Neurosis, Dale of the Melvins, Al of Sleep and Ohm, Dale of Neurosis, the main guy in Neurosis, the main guy, the really serious guy, and Wino of St. Vitus. I thought that band was awesome, even though everyone else thought it was just okay. I thought it was okay. I thought it was a little too smooth, a little too produced, but I didn't hate it. Kind of not my thing. I'm glad Anne Moore digs it, listen, just like Am I the Asshole, we can't all agree. Here's a supergroup that I did love, Boss, which is, as I said earlier, we played already, you already heard it. It was Charlie of Trouble in the Gang, Jonah of Effed Up, Maxime of Rixe, Nick and Amory of The Chisel, and I think I got everybody. They've got a new two-song 7-inch coming out. It's called, the 7-inch is called Cash Him In. I'm sure most of the list, all the hardcore fans know that Jonah lives in England now, and he produces like all the hardcore bands over there. He did Chubby and the Gang. He does a band called Strong Boy. He does Bootlicker. He does Power. I think he might do Power Play. I'm not sure. But he is the go-to guy, punk and hardcore producer in the UK and even in Europe right now. This track isn't strictly hardcore. It's got a little bit more of a power pop or even like what they call pub rock swing to it. But I digged it. I loved it. Hattie Bullitt, did you dig it? And did you enjoy the recent development in hardcore iconography? Whereas instead of having like a really mean looking cover, we have like a cartoon on the cover or something silly on the cover. What's your opinion of that aesthetic as well?
I don't have such a strong opinion about the cover. I think you're right though. I mean, I think just with art in general, right? In punk and indie rock and hardcore, I don't think bands feel as much of an obligation to tell you on the cover in like a really blunt way, like, this is the kind of music you should expect on the inside. Do you know what I mean? People are just sort of doing artwork that they think is interesting, which I'm into. I liked this, but it's so funny, John, because actually what you said about the Chelsea Wolfe project was like exactly what I thought about this. I was like, I really liked it, but I just wanted the song to be better. And I literally thought, oh man, like, I hope this supergroup isn't going to just be like the leftover songs from these guys' like other projects, because that was a little bit what that sounded like to me, which is not to say I hated it. I just didn't grab me. And for the people involved, I just feel like they should be able to do something that would grab me, you know? I'm like really looking forward to see. I hope they continue to put out stuff because I feel like it could be stuff that I was really into. I just wasn't totally into this. Did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was good. It definitely has that sound, you know, where it's like you hear it and you're like, yep, Jonah Falco. And that's not a bad thing. Like, that's a good thing. And the spoken word introduction is from Cal Cram, also of the Chisel. So I think it's really cool how there are so many groups and then everyone's involved in everyone else's like project and wanting to help out and like play. And, you know, it's they care about the music and they're there for the music and they want it to happen and everything. So I think it's great for like creative output. And they have, so this is the single, so I have one other song and I'm looking forward to hearing that to see what it's all about. I like the cover, with the, like the cartoon bottles and stuff hanging out. I think it looks really cool. And with the aesthetics, I do like kind of freaky looking album covers because they're interesting and they're different, but like stuff like this with the artwork, it does look really cool. It does tie in with the music. It does tie in with the, like the overall vibe of the band. And I'm all for that. I think it fits really well.
What did you guys think of the Chubby and the Gang cover, which was considered a very good cover that wasn't hardcore at all, and it really was kind of like oh my God, what the hell's his name? R. Crumb or like Gilbert Shelton of the Fabulous Freak Brothers. Like, what did you think of that look?
That's the Mutt's Nuts cover.
And also the first record too, but yeah.
Right. I liked it. I thought it looked cool because it's colorful and it's like wacky and like you can look at it for a long time and notice different things. So it's kind of nice. Like you can put on the album, listen to it, and then just kind of stare at the cover and really focus on the music and the art and everything all together. So I liked it. I thought it was cool. Hallie, what did you think?
Wait, didn't I already talk about it?
We're talking about the Chubby and the Gang cover, which, like to me, is a distinct homage to R. Crumb and, like, Fabulous Freak Brothers.
I'd have to look at it again. I don't remember. I remember seeing it at the time when we were talking about that album, but I haven't looked at it since.
Fair enough. I really dig it because, like anarcho-punk imagery, hardcore punk imagery, it's kind of stale. And also hardcore imagery, like NYHC. The imagery is very stale. So I like that when bands branch out, but without being necessarily ironic. Actually, I like that. I like how Scowl puts flowers on a lot of their stuff, although Ceremony did that too. But so I think maybe sometimes Ceremony's a little overly serious though. But I like how Scowl's like, here's a sunflower, and then they like ripped your head off. I like it. I do like the Chubby and the Gang cover a lot, and I like the Boss cover because it's cartoonish. And honestly, hardcore is like who really talks like this all the time? But I'm gonna sing like this all the time, and I'm gonna. My favorite is like death metal, where they're like, and then hell, Nurgle, the God of Plague, and then afterwards they get in their Honda and they go home because tomorrow they got to go work, you know, at the beer distributor or something. You know what I mean? It's like, so I extreme music is cartoonish. I like that about it. So I like the Chubby and the Gang, how it is cartoonish, but there's a lot of action to it. There's a lot of movement to it, which is fun, and I think is a very cool way to earnestly represent the genre in a way that it hasn't been earnestly represented before, so I dig it. Anyways, let's play some Converge and Chelsea Wolf, and then we'll come back and we will talk about Vinyl Delays, and we'll be back. And we are back, and a lot of people are bummed out. And why are they bummed out? They're bummed out because vinyl delays are longer than they have ever been in the existence of vinyl pressing. Records have been around for over 100 years, and the delay to press a record is now longer than it's ever been. And to boot, records are the most popular they have ever been since 1992 or even 1990, something like that. So records are massively popular right now. In fact, Adele's new album, 30, the record label pre-ordered for themselves. I hate to use the word pre-order. Like, they've ordered the following number of units to sell because they're selling at least as many number of units. 500,000 records of just a vinyl record, not CD, not digital downloads, not streams, 500,000 vinyl records just for Adele's upcoming record. The result of this is Adele's record and other major label records, which are, you know, Taylor Swift, K-pop band, what do they call it? Not J5.
BTS.
BTS. Those guys are selling tons of records, so the major labels, there's such a shortage to record pressing, is major labels are prioritizing their own records over each other. Like they'll say, all right, press the Adele, let's hold off on the Gwen Stefani reissue because we need to get the Adele records, and there are literally not enough plants that can produce the demand for records. So major labels are looking at a 9-month delay. Indie labels and small labels, which get pushed back after Adele, are looking at a 9 to 12 to 15 month delay for vinyl record. That is, if you place a vinyl order today, the earliest you're going to get it is May 2022, if you're lucky. But you're really looking at probably the end of the year, August 2022, or even December, or even 2023. The delay is massive. Many people are unhappy. I think I have a hot take on this, but I don't know if you guys want me to give my hot take, or if you guys want to do your take first. I'll also add that despite the massive demand for vinyl, it still only accounts for about 10% of income derived from music. That being said, records now outsell CDs both in quantity and in gross income for labels, which they were not doing 3 years ago.
Wow. I just didn't know that, like, Adele fans purchased vinyl. I feel like my mind is blown just by that. Like, I didn't feel like normies buy records. And I love Adele. I'm not dissing Adele at all. I'm just saying I would never guessed that there was like a commercial motivation to press that many Adele records. I'm like kind of impressed. That's pretty cool. I don't know. My biggest reaction to that is just that I have a record that I'm waiting to be pressed. And so mostly I'm just like bummed to hear you saying this. I'm like, man, am I like never going to get my record in my hands? We shall see. John, I'm curious to know what your hot take is.
Well, the general punk community's take and everyone's opinion on Twitter is, I'm so mad at Adele. I'm mad at the major labels. You know, you're killing it for the rest of us, which is kind of true. However, I've got a multi – I also want to point out that more and more record production is being pushed overseas because the plants in the U.S. can't meet the demand at all. So anyways, I've got a lot of opinions on this. My first opinion is you should thank Adele. You should thank Fleetwood Mac. You should thank BTS as much as it annoys me to do so, because I hate to tell you, listeners, you know, the 300 copies of Boss's 7-inch that's being pressed, you know, the 500 copies of Crazy in the Brains that's being pressed, you know, the 2,000 copies of Brendan Kelly's latest records that's being pressed, those aren't keeping vinyl pressings in existence. And if that's all that we had, frankly, vinyl plants would probably all but shut down. You might have a few here or there. You need Fleetwood Mac to carry the burden to keep these up and running so us little rats can get in and get our little treats here and there on their slow weeks. I'm sorry, but that's the truth of the matter. No plant's going to stay open for your, you know, shitty pop punk bands, you know, your beardo punk bands, you know, record about how your girlfriend left you, but you're still friends that drink whiskey and hang out. No one, that's not running an industry. Adele is running an industry. I'm sorry, you know, and it's expensive to make a record pressing plan. So yeah, it's a bummer. I hear you. It's a bummer. Put Star next to that, because I'm going to get to that in a hot second. B, I wonder if this demand might actually kill the vinyl resurgence. Because, I mean, listen, if Adele is selling 500,000 records, then then records are not indie, they're not underground, they're not hip, they're mainstream, which is fine. But you know, once things are mainstream, they stay mainstream, and then they die out like that, right? And so I wonder if this is, you know, everyone for the past 3 or 4 years, guys in record stores, guys that run record labels, they're all like, records are going to hold their value. Everyone's going to love records forever. And I'm like, I don't see that happening. I think there's going to be a crash. And they mark my words. And I'm not happy that there's going to be a crash. I wish there wasn't. I say there's going to be a crash in vinyl. I think it's going to crash hard. I mean, there's always going to be some kind of a vinyl market. There's always going to be some demand because I want records. You know, you want records, but the vast majority of people don't want records. So I see this is the thing that, like, really caused the great record crash of 2023. We'll see. We'll see. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I will be. Also, I will add that everyone's like, you know, there's not enough plants. There's not enough plants. You, listener, you, record label, you're to blame. You are to blame, and here's why. And I'm going to be a dick here, but at least my viewpoint has been – I say to myself – it's like I've got a lot of am I the asshole scenarios. I wonder why that. Well, here's why. I'll be an asshole. But listen, listener, you are to blame, and here's why. And I've been having the same exact point for years now. Is I'm gonna have to be vague, but when a certain record label, a record plant, a record producer that has a record label, they were like, we're the best. We make 180 grams. Look at this record. It's a hologram. Look at this. It's a flexi disc. Look at this record. It's a beautiful splatter. You know, woo, look at us. Oh, and we're also going to ship all our production from the United States overseas because it's a lot cheaper. So yeah, no one paying attention to that, even though we're the OI label and we represent working class punk rock. We're going to fire all our American workers and ship it overseas where it's a lot cheaper and labor rules are a lot less restrictive. But yeah, we're the working class label. When that happened, that label was able to drive another American Rainbow Records out of business. They played so dirty. Like, they would be like, unlike other record labels, we don't have a six-month delay in vinyl pressing. This was like 3 years ago. But the other record pressing plant didn't have a six-month delay either. They had like a six-week delay. You know, but you put out this fake information, and people said, oh, well, maybe this record pressing plant is shitty. I better go with the cool guy that everyone thinks is cool and does everything overseas. Because look, they're 180 grams. Look how thick they are. The problem is they sound like crap. They sound like MP3s, you know. And meanwhile, I mean, people don't even know this, is like record weight really doesn't make that much of a difference. A record weight doesn't make the record sound better. It just means the record is less likely to warp. It's got almost nothing to do with sound quality. There'll be a little bit less vibration, but unless you've got like a mega audiophile, you know, system, it sound quality wise, it's not going to make a difference. It just means it won't warp. I've got, you know, the 80s is the nadir of thin record. Like in the 80s, records were like as thin as a piece of paper. The vast majority of my records never warp, and they still sound fantastic. So it's all a big hoodoo juju thing, you know. And so the point being is, when this label and pressing plant said, you should go with us and you should go with the other people because they're so bad and we're so good. And I was like, wow, record pressing plant, you're so cool. I want you to press my record. Well, now they're overseas, and now you can't get connected to them because supply and demand is all out of whack due to COVID, but American pressing plants aren't having as much problem because they've got better resources and better workers, and they're more consistent and they sound better, except for they can't meet the demand because there's really only one big American pressing plant left, because the other one that used to be in America and then went overseas drove the other American plant out of business. So all of you that, you know, said, ooh, 180 gram, ooh, collector's vinyl, you're the reason that this is happening to a small degree, but still, you should all feel bad and think about it next time. And, you know, don't support charlatans. That's what I'm saying. I'm coming up very hot and heavy here, but I feel strongly about this, and I feel very bad about Rainbow Records still. Maybe I'm being a dick.
I mean, you are totally right. Sort of, I'm going back to your earlier point of like, when it was only like a handful of like punks that were still holding on to the like whole tradition of vinyl. Yeah, plants were just closing. You're right. It's like it can't sustain an industry. So I just thought that was, I mean, it's, now that you say it, it's kind of obvious, but I think it's interesting that you pointed that out, because it was like we were just watching plants die for like a long time, you know, and punks were like, well, we still think this is cool. Why are at least plants going out of business? It's like, well, there's not enough of you.
Indeed, and more. Care to follow with my insane rant?
CDs will rise again.
See these rules.
I think they will.
I hope
that's
they do.
That's really interesting too, because that, you know, that's definitely, definitely happening at some point, right? Like that there's going to be like a big like nostalgia. Because the thing is, we had like a resurgence of cassettes. For like nostalgia reasons, but the problem is that cassettes just, they're not durable and they don't sound great. But you know, CDs, like dudes, they do sound all right, you know, they sound pretty good. So I, and you get your artwork and you get a thing that you can hold, and I think when the nostalgia for that hits, I do think that people will be excited about collecting CDs again. I don't know, John, do you think that'll be a thing?
I think, well, first of all, not only do you get a physical thing and amazing sound quality, you get that lovely clack, 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 which I still love. I do think it will, I don't think it'll be as big as the vinyl resurgence, because when I'm selling records, the young people actually are starting to buy CDs again, which is, for a while they weren't, only dads were buying CDs. Now the young people are starting to buy CDs. Jane's Addiction, weirdly, is hot lately, and Nirvana is always hot on CD. But where was I going with this? I think it will be kind of a thing, but also I think that we're getting into an age where the youngest consumer has never known physical product ever, and so there will be a small minority of young listeners that want physical product, but the vast majority of them don't give a crap. I mean, Halle Bullet, when's the last time you collected an oil lamp? You know what I mean?
Well, but I don't know, like college kids still like lava lamps. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there is, it's something just has to be so old that it comes around the other side to being like cool again. You know, that happens with everything.
You think Spats will make a comeback?
What's that?
Oh God, I hope so. That would be amazing. I hope Spats make a big comeback. I only know what Spats are, Em, because sometimes as a child I had to wear them over tap shoes as part of a costume. They're they're like the little white thing that like covers your shoelaces and like
the cowboy thing.
No, not really cowboys. More okay. Like think like vaudeville. Think like right? Like think like Fred Astaire, right?
Yeah.
John, help me out.
Yeah,
what references is gonna help? What references will help M remember Spats?
I got the vaudeville.
I was thinking like Greg Gadsby and like
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? What do you think the purpose of a Spats is? Like what is it supposed to do?
Is it just to look cool?
I guess.
Cover those ghastly laces. Don't assault my eyes with your ugly shoelaces. They must be covered in something white and tidy. No, I don't really know. We should Google that.
Maybe it's like a class thing.
St. Myrtle. Do you see Edgar? He had his shoelaces showing. How horrible. So we're talking about records. Yeah, anyways. So I feel very fiery about this. I see a crash coming on, and I'm glad people are into records, man. Records are cool. I mean, you can buy records at Target. You can buy records at Walmart. That's pretty crazy, right? So.
Yeah. I mean, it's sad to think about, but you're right. It's like anything that gets hot is like, it does not stay that way. That's just culture, right?
This is not going to stay that way. I mean, Pog is so popular, right?
I don't know what a Pog is. What's a Pog?
You don't know what a Pog is?
No, what is that?
Pogs in the early 90s were an extreme fad where basically they were supposed to be like cardboard bottle caps, and you would stack them up and you'd have what's called a slammer, which was like a heavy metal pog, and you would slam the metal one onto the cardboard ones, and whichever one's flipped over, you got to keep.
Yeah, this is vaguely ringing a bell. All right.
So anyways, I hope my Pog investment pays off pretty soon. So I got a lot of money in Pogs. Let's do two more stories and we'll wrap this one up. We've been on the show a long time already. Wow, it's flying by. Young Gov, he's got a new album coming out. It's gonna be called Young Gov. It's gonna be called Gov 3, and then another one's gonna be coming after that called Gov 4. It's Gov doing power pop. He released his new solo. It's called Lolo Lonely. He's going on tour. I'm gonna be seeing him in Philadelphia at the Photo Club. Gov's a cool guy. And I'll be frank, if you read Young Gov's social media, and some of his interviews, you're like, I think this guy might be a total dick, but he's not. I've interviewed him a couple of times. He's very nice. So I guess it's just a character that he plays, you know? I do find it interesting that he came out of the hardcore band. I can't remember anything these days. What was the hardcore band he was in?
No Warning.
Yeah, No Warning. Yeah. And now he does like kind of like lovey-dovey power pop, and he's been doing that for a long time now. I like it. I don't love it, but I like it. I think it's cool, and I like seeing him live. And yeah, so two thumbs up for Young Gov. It's cool. Hallie Bullet, Young Gov. What do you think?
Yeah, like I'm in this. Had the same feelings that you did. It's like I liked it. I didn't love it, but it's got like kind of, you know, it's got kind of almost like a 90s indie rock feel. It had some nice harmonies. I thought it was, yeah. I was totally happy to be listening to it while I was listening to it, and then sort of just didn't feel the need to go back and listen to it again. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Em, what did you think of this?
It was okay. It took a while to kind of grow on me, and then it was like, okay, yeah, it's not bad. It's not my favorite thing in the world. I don't mind the music.
like that's the most tepid endorsement I've ever heard.
I don't mind
the music.
I'll probably end up checking it out though, because I like the first two albums. But I like the video. I can do a rigging endorsement of the video, because like it's colorful and there's weird bits of static, and it's cool. It looks neat. Yeah.
Yeah, the videos. The video is like definitely going for like a retro. Help me out. How do you describe this aesthetic? Like an early
80s MTV aesthetic. That's what
Yeah. And it really made it. While I was watching it, I was laughing because we just rewatched Children of the Corn over Halloween weekend, and it's got like just like the worst attempt at like these digital effects, like just the absolute most like abysmal. It's just really interesting what used to pass for special effects in the 80s, and this was to me was like kind of going for that, but like in a cooler way. It was just sort of borrowing from that like really, really early, right, really early digital like effects. It was pretty cool. Wait, Em, are you a Children of the Corn fan?
It's one of those this used to be scary kind of thing.
I know. It's just so bad, right? It's so bad. I couldn't believe. When I was younger, that was like a movie that people would talk about as just being like, oh my God, like you're not brave enough to watch that. That is so scary. It's like hilarious to watch it now.
It's and a more gem.
Scariest horror movie there is. Go.
Oh, we got to give it to The Exorcist. Because you never forget the first time you see it, and you never forget the last time. Yeah. Just like the visceralness of it.
Hallie Bullet, scariest horror movie.
I'm trying to think. Scariest horror movie. I don't know. I can think of my favorite horror movies right now, but I don't know that they're the scariest ones.
What are the faves?
I love It Follows, and I love I really love this crazy. Em, are you really into horror movies?
Yeah.
Do you know this one? I feel like it was like Danish maybe, and it's like called like Mommy something, and it's about these twins and their mom has had like plastic surgery. That movie's awesome.
Mommy Dearest.
Is it Mommy Dearest?
I'm pretty sure, isn't it?
Is it? Because I feel like that's an old like that's like an old
Mommy Dearest is about like Joan Crawford.
Yeah. That's like a cut. It's Mommy something.
What is that?
I like that one. I don't know. I like Scream. I like the ones that got me into horror, because I didn't think I could handle horror. And then it took like some of the more like poppy horror movies, like the more fun ones. It took Drew Barrymore to make me realize like that I could get through a horror movie and that they were like worth, you know, that it was a genre I could get into. So I have like nostalgia for that era of horror movie too, you know?
It's Good Night, Mommy.
Good Night, Mommy. Yeah. What a freaky movie. I like that one. Wait, what are your guys' favorite horror movies?
You know, I have two favorites. Is I love the classic seven, like Exorcist, or like the one with the midget. I can't remember the name. The one where the 70s had all these movies that like weren't even actually horror movies. They were just kind of like messed up, you know?
Yeah.
Exorcist, but like even like Rosemary's Baby. There's actually not like a whole lot of supernatural. Wicker Man, the original, not Cage, the original one. I was going out with a girl once, and I'm like, you gotta see this movie. This is in like college, where like when guys like say to the girlfriends, you gotta hear this album, you gotta see this movie. I'm like, watch this movie, and she was so unimpressed. And I'm like, Wicker Man, you know. Anyways, but also, man, I love the 80s. You know, like Jason, Halloween, Freddy Krueger. But also, honestly, I'll say It Part One. It Part Two is pretty bad. It Part One is actually really, really, really scary. Like with Tim Curry, like it all floats down here. You know, it's like that is like really freaking, really messed up.
Did you see the new one?
I saw the first one, the first half of it. I thought it was okay. Like honestly, I hate computer effects. Generally speaking, I feel horror movies are so much more scary when there's not computer effects because it's real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even now when it's computer effect, you can tell it's a computer effect and it looks like a video game. You know, but when Tim Curry's like looking up at you through a sewer and you know, and he's got fangs, you're like holy shit, you know, Tim Curry's trying to eat me. Also, Hellraiser 1. The rest of them are pretty bad. Hellraiser 1, fantastic and messed up.
I have to go back and watch that one. I was at an age where I like didn't fit, you know, I just felt like horror movies were for other people when that came out. So I've got to go back. I've got to go back and watch some of the classics from that era.
You opened the box, Clarice, or devils. I'll try to do like the woman. It's like devils to some, angels to others.
That's creepy. Messed up movie.
And more. Go ahead. Your favorites. And then we'll do one more story and then we'll get out of here. Man, I got to watch more horror. I love horror. I don't watch nearly enough. I love them. Go ahead. Oh, Chucky 1. Chucky 1 really is a good film. And more. Go ahead.
There's so many. Like, I agree with both of you. So far, there's so many good ones. One of my favorite movies of all time is Nightmare on Elm Street 3, which is Dream Warriors, because it has the vein kill, where it, like, rips the guy's veins out of him and, like, uses them like a little marionette and then, like, cuts them, and then he falls off a building. Like that. That one's so good. The first Night of the Demons. I love that movie so much. I saw it on YouTube, and there's a scene where Angela, she's kind of, I think at that point, she's being possessed, or she is possessed, and she dances to Stigmata Martyr by Bauhaus, and that's how I was introduced to Bauhaus.
That's fantastic.
So that was awesome. Most of the Friday the 13th movies. I want to see the new Halloween. I want to see Halloween Kills. I don't know what it would be like, but I really want to see it.
I heard it was good. Heard it was like every. I heard it was like just what you want it to be.
Yeah, I hope so, because Jamie Lee Curtis is awesome, and just her back. I want to see what happens. Train to Busan messed me up for a really long time. It's really good. It's a South Korean horror movie, and it's like zombies and they're on a train. It will rip your heart out. It's freaky, but it's emotional as all hell.
Whoa, wait, what's that one called?
Train to Busan.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of like really. There's just so many, like there's some I'm not thinking of, and it's frustrating because it's like I want to think of them. Tim Curry is just the best.
What's the one that like Hunger Games was basically like a ripoff of? Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay, talk amongst yourselves. I'll Google it. It's like an old like Japanese movie or something, right? Isn't it? Here, okay, I'm gonna look it up.
Talk Battle about Royale.
Yes, that one.
I thought you were going to say the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger. What was that? Running Man.
Oh.
I don't think I know that one.
No All tears, right, please. It's such a waste of good suffering. And here's something that won't make you suffer. Punk Crush. They've got a new video. It's for Blackout. And more, tell us about Punk Crush and Blackout. And we will wrap this up because we are running very long. But that's all right. Listen, sometimes Slow News Week, you know, it causes the
we
best
do
conversation.
This every time. Because then we just we just feel like we can just bullshit. And then we just go totally overboard with the bullshit. So sorry, listeners.
So Punk Crush, they are back with new music. So this is their first new song since their Good Luck EP that was released in 2019, so that's exciting. They share a member with Susie True, who are also a really good band, and this is their first song with a lineup change. So now they have another bassist and guitarist, so there's more depth to the song itself. It's a bit slower than their previous output, but it's really, really good. Deals with getting tired of blacking out from drinking and getting sober, and it's catchy. It's really good. It's very interesting because there's different changes within it. The video is shot in black and white, which is great for the name of the song, and it follows somebody. She gets up and cleans up after a party and goes out roller skating, and it looks really fun. So I'm really excited because Punk Crush are working on a new album, and that'll be out, I think, next year. So I'm looking forward to it. I think there will be lots of just great songs because I love the Good Luck EP. I like this song. This song will grow more the more I listen to it, but glad they're back. What did you guys think of the new Punk Crush?
Yeah, I liked this song. I did. My only complaint about it, which I think is valid, is just it just was too long to me. Mm-hmm. Just for a pop song, I think you're like a minute and 40 seconds into this song before you hear the chorus. So I was like sort of just sitting there for a while, just being like, wait a minute, like, is there a chorus? Like, is there ever going to be a chorus? Like, where's the chorus? But then the chorus hits and it's really quite good. It's really quite impactful. So I did like it. But, you know, yeah, like over 4 minutes is just, it's a lot to ask from a pop song. I think this could have like used a little bit of trimming in the songwriting, but it is, I liked it. And I enjoyed the video. John, I'm curious to know what you thought of this.
I thought I'd gone to the limits. I hadn't. The Cenobites gave me experience beyond the limits. Pain and pleasure. Indivisible.
Peter, you Hellraiser? Who are you?
I'm Frank Cotton from Hellraiser, who was also the killer in Dirty Harry, and he was also one of the Cardassians on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Wait, there were Cardassians on... There were Cardassians on Deep Space Nine?
I dig this track. I think Punk Crush is cool. I liked it. And I dig it. And you know, there are a lot of these abstract wandering videos, which is someone like kind of walking around and like looking at the universe. But I still like those videos. I don't know why, but I do. So I thought this was cool. I dug it. Let's play a song, and then we'll come back and we'll wrap this on up. Let's play Punk Crush. This is Punk Crush doing Blackouts.
So it ends, thickest of memories. Well, how do we pretend? Broken reality, how do we discern where our dreams began? The sweetest sounds of the summer was your laughter, sweetest laughter. Oh, the sweetest endless running summer. next day. Wrote a fake apology that you'll never see, and I promised myself 100 days is why.
We're back. And more. Any other things you want to say about horror movies or anything else?
I forgot so many, and they'll come to me the minute we stop recording, and I'll be like, ah, shit, I should have talked about this, that, and the other thing.
You better hope the Cenobites don't come to you once we stop recording.
Oh, I'm well prepared.
Hallie Bullet, have I driven Hellraiser into the ground?
No, I mean, you've brought it now. I'm going to watch it now. I've never watched it. So, no, you've brought it to the forefront of my mind. And yeah, I don't know. If people are into like kind of more just like power pop, I'm like really liking this song by this band Second Grade. It's called Dennis Hopper in Easy Rider. Just, you know, it's not punk. I would never play it on the podcast, but if you're a power pop person, give it a listen. John, what are your parting thoughts, my friend?
Well, we'll see you next week because we have such sights to show you.
Oh, that was legit scary.